Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com. Whole Foods Market creates win-win partnerships with our suppliers, and we'd love to tell their stories. Red Jacket Orchards is a family-owned farm in the Finger Lakes of the Hudson Valley that's grown for decades alongside Whole Foods Market. Their apples, pears, ciders, and juices are some of New York's best and seasonal staples for any kitchen. Come have a taste in one of our six Manhattan locations.
And welcome to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. We are the ladies of Groundworks, Inc. I'm Carmen DeVito.
And I'm Alice Marcus Craig.
And we design, install, and maintain gardens in and around New York City. And the season's kind of coming to an end shortly, Alice.
Even I know.
Though you can't tell that by today's weather. It seems like a spring day.
It is. But we are busy, busy planting bulbs for next spring.
Yeah, and cleaning up those gardens and making some compost. In fact, in the second half of our show today, we're going to take some calls for our guests. And the first person to call or to email in will win a bag of our own homemade Brooklyn Blend compost.
And yo, yo.
Yo, Brooklyn's in the house. Anyway, today we have some great guests, Rochelle Grayer and Susan Cohen, founders and editors of a brand new, just launched online outdoor design magazine called Leaf. Welcome, ladies.
Thanks. Thank you.
Hi.
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 So let's tell our listeners a little bit about you. Alice and I always like to get bios about our guests. And Rochelle, I'm going to start with you. You had a very interesting bio on the Leaf page. You have gone Mach 1.2 in the backseat of an F-14. Were you in the upright position?
Yeah.
Better than horizontal.
For the most part.
Okay, because you had a really interesting bio, so I thought I'd share some of that. You were also instrumental in launching Russia's first commercial satellite. Is that right?
Yeah, well, before changing careers to be a landscape designer, I had another career in physics and worked for some aerospace companies. And
that's awesome.
Like, stuff. Yeah.
And then the last was planting a giant sequoia tree. So I thought that was a good, like,
balance.
Yeah. A good contrast from aerospace to...
Well, they're all monumental.
Yes, exactly. So some more stuff about Rochelle. She loves truck songs. And she has a super special mixtape heard only in her flare-sided Ford pickup while on plant buying and flea marketing adventures. And if it's in the plant kingdom and it's chartreuse or grassy or both, Rochelle wants it. She also can't own enough pairs of 7 jeans. And I'm so glad you said that because that's one of my favorite brand jeans. And she also thinks that Rhinestone Cowboy and Grease are two of the best things about the 70s. I love that, Rochelle. That's awesome. And she wears sambas to garden and hunters to work. And Alice and I always wear
right
hunters
on.
To work. So I thought that was a really good bio.
Rochelle,
thank you.
I think you should make a mixtape of that truck song.
Yeah.
Oh, I could. I should publish it, maybe.
Absolutely.
Oh, that would definitely sell.
Songs to garden by.
Now, Susan Cohen. So the other person that we have on the line is Susan Cohen. She is a practicing residential landscape designer and a co-founder of Leaf, who believes that great design should permeate everything we live with. Susan has an affinity for contemporary design, but also loves antiques and traditional design. She describes herself as full of contradictions and, to make it worse, has the next shiny thing syndrome. So can you describe that a little bit more, Susan?
Oh, my goodness. I have a very short attention span over the course course of years when it comes to design. As soon as I find something else I like, something else catches the corner of my eye, and I like that just as equally, and then something else, and then something else, and something else. And I tend to kind of absorb all of this all the time, all the time. It's like feeding the beast.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, at the speed that technology is working now, you always have something new to get excited about, you know?
Well, and the
absolutely. I think that's one of the wonders of technology for me, is that it works as fast as my brain and desire does.
Right. And the unexamined life is not worth living, right?
Right.
That's for sure.
Yeah. So you both have these very interesting backgrounds. We'd like you to tell us a little bit about what inspired you to launch this magazine.
It's so funny. We've been asked this story a number of times now. I think we're getting good at telling it. But we met a few years ago through, I don't know if you know Chris Hiley, or when I say met, we met over the phone. We were being interviewed
much
at
like
the same
today.
Time, much like this. And we were being interviewed about blogging at the time. This is a few years ago, and the question came up of, you know, why do you blog, and I was sort of talking about how I had started my website, but how it had kind of quickly morphed into like the beginnings of this magazine that I wished existed but just didn't, and you know, this was like my tiny effort to like kind of do that,
right.
And anyway, you know, over the years Susan and I have gotten to know each other a bit better and met a number of times, and it just came up again and again, and with the advent of online magazine making a little more simple,
a
I guess,
reality,
or more. I wouldn't say what we
it's
did
not,
was simple, but
simple,
a little bit more
accessible,
available, I guess,
accessible,
to people like
right.
Susan and I to create. You know, we started talking early in the spring, and of, you know, do we want to do this, and you know, we both were pretty eager to kind of see where we could take it.
Right, it's a brave initiative, since so many magazines are really starting to struggle these days, you know, especially design magazines over the past couple of years, Domino and House and Garden and even Gourmet is gone. So what
yeah.
do you think are the factors that will make your magazine work?
We don't have
first
any...
No print.
We don't have any bricks and mortar, period.
Right.
No print, no bricks and mortar. It's totally virtual.
Good.
Our office is even virtual.
Yes.
We don't have a phone number.
Right.
Which may or may not be a good thing, but we made the decision early on to keep everything as kind of sustainable and virtual as possible, so we could collaborate in real time that way.
Right. No, that's great.
Yeah.
You know what also I think will hopefully be part of our success is, as much as I love so many of the magazines that don't any longer exist, I feel like in our niche of gardens and design and whatnot, there historically hasn't been a whole lot of magazines, you know, as compared to interior design. But those that are there... they're not necessarily, I wouldn't say, for the large part, they don't kind of bubble up from the people who are in that industry in maybe the same way that interiors magazines might.
Right.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying. Yes.
They tend to be, you know, like even now, you know, some of the big magazines in our industry are staffed by people who came from, you know, interiors or food or you know, lots of other places, but they're not landscape designers or horticulturalists or whatever that
yes.
tend to lead these magazines, and I really think there's something to that because I think having your pulse on the field in a way that you can only really have your pulse on the field when you've kind of been out there and digging in the dirt and you know really knowing what's going on or building somebody's garden or whatever is an interesting sort of thing to bring to a magazine and. That, you know, I don't know if it's entirely been there before.
And I found it interesting that when I was looking at your premier issue, this fall issue, the magazine, I mean, you know, it comes from the informed by gardening and horticulture, but it's very encompassing. I mean, in the first issue, you have stories about young farmers, a basket maker in Norway, a spread of fashion finds for fall, which I really loved. I mean, this is not your typical outdoor or gardening magazine at all.
It's not a how-to magazine, which is really interesting.
Because between the two of us, we have, you know, we have varied interests, and we take a very broad view of what it means, of what design means outside. Mm-hmm. I think that's it's not just gardens, it's not just plants, it's not just furniture. It's all everything, you know, anything that you can do or experience beyond your door.
Right. And that's what I love about it. When I saw, I've been watching it over Facebook, you know, the progress over these few months of the launch, and I was really fascinated by it. And that's why Allison and I really wanted to have you on the show, because we wanted to understand your process and, you know, who do you think your reader is going to be?
Well, we look at a lot of the interiors magazines, which we love, mm-hmm. and the question always seems to beg in our minds, you have this whole interior lifestyle, and an interiors magazine generally does cover travel, it does cover food, it does cover a little bit of fashion.
Yeah.
But nobody ever questions any of that
right. When
you're looking at, like, House Beautiful or Traditional Home or any of those kinds of magazines. And our thought was, having this sort of exterior space and a relevance of a great outdoors and an awareness of the great outdoors, not just inside your four walls. Why doesn't all of that apply in the very same way to exterior design as it does to interior design? And I think that's kind of how we live and how we kind of see things, but never really get that from a magazine. And so,
Carmen and I do obviously some promotional stuff for our company, and we found that a lot of the publications that sometimes we work with, they don't understand what the process is of making a garden, or they see it as only that, and they don't see the connections to daily life. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. a few years ago, the thing that was so hot was like the outdoor room, right? Like everybody was. Every magazine was covering the outdoor room, which is great because it does bridge both the inside and the outside. But the act of making that room and then making it appropriate and how you really live in that space is essential, I think, to the understanding.
And the design, it was so design driven that horticulture was by the wayside. Do you know what I mean? Like they didn't bring in, the important element of, is this really going to work?
Right.
Yeah, that just reminds me of something that I think is so sort of funny. I run a farmer's market as well as these other things, and what baffles me is a few years back I was struggling with my tomatoes. There was a massive tomato blight going throughout New England,
right.
And I kind of didn't know what to do and whatever. And I went to the farmer's market, and there's one grower, one vendor there that always has these fantastic tomatoes, and I was asking her, and she's this older woman who's just been a farmer for her whole life here in New England, and asking her like, well, what do you do with your tomatoes? She gave me tremendously fantastic advice. Like literally, she never starts tomatoes. She like literally puts seeds in the ground. Like all of this like contraption with like light boxes and starts and all that. None of it. She doesn't do any of that. Straight in the ground, great tomatoes.
Oh, interesting.
But you know what I found? So when I tell this story to people, people are like, like there's this weird like loss of a connection between like the fact that we can grow our own food and like farmers, that's what they do, and horticulture and garden design and like other people whose living is from the land, like farmers, they're all related and it's all similar, but I think there's a big disconnect there. And I think with the magazine, we're trying to do a lot of things, but one of those things is to try and, not have such a disconnect. The great outdoors is a big ecological system. We're all kind of working together on this, and it's not like farmers and agriculture and garden makers are so different.
Right.
We're
all
in the same media. Well,
it's so good to hear you say that, Rochelle.
I think it's important what people don't think about, and what garden magazines generally, in my opinion, don't do, is they don't incorporate the human element.
Mm.
Yeah.
And you see, you know, yeah, fantastically beautiful, aspirational spaces without a touch of a human being anywhere there.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
And one of the things, you know, just in terms of contemporary 21st century life and what Rochelle was talking about in terms of disconnect and with the outdoors, is that if people start to relate to the outside designed environment as they relate to the inside designed environment, there won't be such a big disconnect. That gulf will be smaller.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really the trend now. But I like what you're saying about multidisciplinary instead of like departmentalized, almost like a liberal arts education versus, you know, a trajectory of engineering or, you know, whatever, physics or, you know, math or whatever.
No, not physicists.
Because you plant sequoia trees. But the point is that all of these things do relate, and you do need a broad understanding of how the world works.
I think there's also a disconnect with a lot of homeowners in that a homeowner would not renovate their own bathroom or their own kitchen generally. Some would, and some are handy, and they would.
Yeah.
But just about every homeowner is willing to go outside with a shovel, stick it in the ground, and say, you know, that's enough.
Right. I'm a weekend gardener.
All of us here are sitting, you know, we're also wearing our landscape designer hats, and for me, that's not good enough. You know, I want people to respect the fact that a designed environment can make their lives better.
Mm-hmm.
Not just pretty, but better.
Right.
And that's a big difference. Well, we have to take a little bit of a break. When we come back, we're going to talk more with Susan Cohen and Rochelle Greer of Leaf Magazine. Please stay tuned.
And welcome back. That was a little Black Sabbath, also from the 70s, Rochelle. That was a song actually called Sweet Leaf in honor of Leaf Magazine.
Oh!
So we were talking with Susan Cohen and Rochelle Greer of Leaf Magazine, a brand new online design magazine just launched this fall. If any of our listeners want to call or email questions to our guests, please do so at the Heritage Radio website, and let us know what your questions are. And the first one to do so will get a free bag of our compost.
I think it's cool you're making compost in Brooklyn, by the way.
Yeah.
I lived in Brooklyn for a number of years. It's very cool.
Oh, good. Well, we have so much waste, you know, from landscaping. So we thought, let's turn it into something. Brooklyn Blend.
That's right.
Anyway, back to the magazine. So tell us about some of the challenges, logistically and otherwise, of getting this magazine off the ground. Because you both live in different states, and you have other work and commitments, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, well, we've already mentioned the virtual office. So, you know, I think even just when we setting up our business, I think having, you know, two home-based offices in two different states were, you know, right out of the gates, we had our lawyers and our accountants scratching their heads about, what's the best way to
where
set this
we
up,
incorporate?
You know?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, now it's, you know, I think we've sorted those things out for the most part, but it's, and the virtual thing is quite frankly working. I don't see it as a big challenge at all.
I think
other people other people kind of, you know, wonder how that works. But I mean, truly, between Skype and Dropbox and a few other good technology tools, it's
pretty easy, right?
It's pretty easy, yeah. I think probably the biggest challenge now is continuing to build the support for it and business partners and really, you know, kind of just as any startup, get it off the ground and financially make it like a viable thing that we can, continue to do for a long time. So.
Yeah,
that's our biggest challenge.
Let's talk about viability.
Yeah, let's talk about the advertisers. In your first issue, you're able to attract some, I thought, pretty impressive and serious advertisers. How were you able to get them on board with a brand new magazine like that? How did that work?
We have an amazing,
our market is relatively.
We've got to give Sandy a shout out.
Oh yes,
Sandy Sloan is our advertising director, and I really think that that they were interested in all of us. One, due to her and her ability to kind of reach out and explain the vision, but I think also. It's an underserved market, and I think we're hopefully filling a niche that not just readers but also advertisers, I think, there's a need.
In all of the interior magazines, and again, I'm not trying to compare apples to oranges.
Yeah, yeah.
Many of those advertisers advertise in those interior design magazines because they want to reach the design enthusiast or the design professional.
Sure.
So that by positioning ourselves kind of as a kind of satellite of that market, mm-hmm. We were able to say, look, this is not, a horticultural magazine. This is a magazine where somebody who wants a beautiful piece of furniture is going to come and look for
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was really, really important in our talking to the advertisers to do that. And they're also super curious. I mean, it's Wild West. It's the Wild West out there.
Sure.
There's no rules yet.
Right, because it's internet-based.
Because it's internet-based mm-hmm. and it's digital and it's new and it's clickable and it's immediate and trackable,
And pass-alongable. You don't have to wait till, it's in someone's dentist office for like, the pass-along
right.
to happen.
You don't have to steal it from your doctor.
That's right.
Well, and on the you don't have to wait until it's in your dentist office, even on the editorial side, we were making editorial decisions and literally adding things probably a week before we published, which, with a traditional publishing model, the June issue might be done in,
right.
March.
You're
and,
6 to
and,
8 months
you know,
out.
Printing
right.
and all of that. And so, the instant kind of gratification of, this is happening now and that short turnaround is something that we can really capitalize on too and make some quick decisions and still publish something.
and that's what advertisers are all about, is the quick sale, because you're so contemporary, they probably feel that their product is getting or whatever it is they're repping, that it's getting quick bill in a
yeah
and yeah. You can also measure the results quickly. You can say how many people clicked on it, right, Susan?
Right.
How many people looked at the pages, which pages were looked at? Do you have the ability to do that for the advertisers?
Yeah, we do absolutely. Yep.
Yeah, it's really a brilliant
and
model.
and savvy advertisers should have, if they have their own analytics on their own websites, will be able to tell exactly who came from where and how many sales and calls, normally with, magazine advertising, excuse me, you can spend whatever you're going to spend on an ad and
how do you know?
It's not that easy to tie that to a sale necessarily,
unless
somebody comes right out and says, "Oh, I saw you in Elle Decor or whatever." Here you know a little bit clearer. Not necessarily with everything, but it's all part of that image sort of advertising, but there is some real accountability in the online world that is, I would say, in some ways less so you know, in there's other, also a different, you know,
when, you know, it's not all, you know, roses and, you know, sunshine here. There's been some real struggle with helping our advertisers understand that old models, the print models, don't necessarily apply here.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, so, for example, we've been struggling with the fact that people want to know how many subscribers we have.
Right.
Well, both Rochelle and I run successful blogs with subscribers, knowing, and we know that the number of subscribers online doesn't have anything to do with the number of page views or the number of visitors to a site.
Right.
It has nothing to do with that.
Right.
But yet, because it's so new, there's a whole bunch of education that has to go involved in, like, how many page views, how many impressions you've gotten.
It's a new language.
And we're trying to develop an entire online community that involves not only the magazine, but our Facebook page and our Twitter feed and our blog and all of that. So it's a lot of added value for an advertiser.
Sure. And we noticed that you also have leaflets, which is the blogging.
Our blog.
Yeah. So how does that tie into Leaf?
It's just a way for us to keep on, you know, to put daily, you know, 5 or 6 days a week, we post
updates,
stuff that we find that we like that we may not ever, you know, we probably wouldn't be able to use in the magazine. It might be a picture, it might be a chair, it might be a doormat, it might be, you know, a cool place to go and visit.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also a way for us to keep, and that's part of the commitment that you make when you publish online, is that it's not static.
Right.
There's a constant flow of
thought and interesting.
You're right, and that's where my next shiny thing syndrome comes in very handy.
Oh, that's a great quality.
So, if you had to define either you, Rochelle, or Susan, or both, perhaps, if you had to define how you make the editorial decision. You know what I mean? How do you decide, and this is brand new, of course, we realize, how do you decide what goes in, you know, each issue? What are some of the criteria?
Well, I'll tell you, the first 6 issues were technically planned between Susan and I sitting in a hotel room a couple months ago now in Connecticut. We literally kind of picked a point halfway between where we live and met there for, you know, about 36 hours. The two of us, I mean, being magazine novices, we've both written for other publications and whatnot, but, beyond that, we publish our own blogs. We haven't ever put together a magazine, but we knew what we wanted, and so we literally, it was like this massive creative purge, and I think we truly could have come up with ideas for probably 3 years in a row, but we limited ourselves to one. Going forward from that, as I said before, we can change things around up like till the very last minute, and we do. You know, things become more or less viable, more interesting, less interesting, whatever it is. We literally work it out on a day-to-day basis, but we knew we wanted to, you know, have a little bit of food and recipes, and so we came up with flavor. We knew we wanted some history, so we have root. We have a couple departments that weren't in our current or first preview issue, but will be in our launch issue, related to, moods and inspiration boards and maybe even some, more hard-hitting...
Politics,
yes, politics of the industry.
Plant world politics.
I love that.
Yeah.
Breaking news in the horticulture community.
Right.
Well, that's how Carmen and I kind of do the radio show, you know, weekly. It's the same sort of thing. It's like, what do we want to talk about? And then there's just this endless, you know, variety of topics, and you know, we kind of are like, let's do this then and do that then and blah blah blah.
I think it's funny, people are surprised to hear that you know, even my own family is like, how did you come up with all that stuff? And it, like, for us, I think Susan would agree completely, ideas about what to write about is the last thing we worry about. We've got plenty of those.
Right.
The amazing thing is that I would say, and I think Rochelle would probably agree with this, We agree on 90% of what's proposed, what we each propose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the 10% where we're like, you know, somebody's like, well, I can't really visualize that. And then the other person will either say, okay, I can see that, or they'll
walk
make a case
through it.
For it.
Yeah,
say,
exactly.
You know, here's this. Like, let's take a look at this. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And we're very, very open about it.
It's flexible.
It's really
right.
A fluid, fluid process.
Yeah, yeah. It's important to have a good business partner like that.
Yeah.
Wink, wink.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and we love that you had a feature about Ellen Biddle Shipman, one of our favorite ladies of design and horticulture. Can you tell us a bit about that decision and why did you feature her in particular to start with?
I think because all three of us, our other editor, Lynn Felicia Gallant, she's our managing editor. Lynn and I are both like huge Shipman fans. I had visited Stan Hewitt Hall in Ohio this past summer, and I was just blown away by it. Mm-hmm. I've seen parts of her gardens, but that's the only one that I've ever seen that really was complete. And I said, you know, it's very contemporary. There's native plants. It was fabulous. I said, you know, so let's start there.
That's great.
The bonus, which is kind of a side story and kind of weird, is that, and I didn't realize this, I'd read a couple of books about her, was that, you know, she had an all-female practice,
mm-hmm.
which, blazing vanguard for her time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
And she succeeded in what was truly a man's world.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, to have that kind of inspiration in your first issue, even if it's close to 100 years old at this point,
right,
it's still, you know, an incredible thing. So we'll probably profile more people like that who are vanguards and a little
That's
bit
great.
Nuts and outside the box and maybe
yeah.
not as well known.
Yeah,
yeah. So.
We had a one of our early shows was called The Ladies of Horticulture, and it was exactly on you know
she
quick
was one.
Quick profile, and she was one of them, and yeah, so we applaud you on that.
Yeah,
I think that's great.
So when's the next issue coming out? Can you give us a little preview of what you're working on? A little pre
2112.
Yeah,
would that be January or
okay?
February 1st.
Okay,
so the magazine's going to be quarterly. Is that right?
No,
it'll be six times a year is our plan, but
okay.
we as we're starting out, we did this preview issue to kind of test the waters, see how it would go, and then the next one coming out in February, and our hope is after that we can carry forward with six times a year every other month.
And I want to just remind people that you do offer paper copies of the magazine from MagCloud, is that right?
We do, yeah. You can buy a paper copy.
Okay. So you go to magcloud.com.
Yeah, it's really easy. It's right on in the table of contents. I mean, on the masthead, you just click on that. Takes you right there. You just pay for
it. It's a print-on-demand model, so it's not like there's a bunch of copies of Leaf magazine sitting in a warehouse.
Right.
It's, if you want one, they'll print one for you. So.
Yeah,
great. Well, thank you so much, Susan and Rochelle, for joining us today on We Dig Plants. Unfortunately, we're out of time. We encourage you to take a look at Leaf Magazine's premier issue at www.leafmag.com. Is that right, Susan?
Yep.
And thank you for being on the show. It was inspiring and beautiful.
And good luck with everything.
Good luck.
We're excited
thanks. Thanks for reading.
We're
thank
excited
you.
To keep our eye on it.
You've been listening to We Dig Plants on Heritage Radio Network. The show is produced and engineered by the fearless Jack Inslee. A special thanks goes out to our sponsor.
Jack's blushing.
If you missed any part of the show, please note it's available via archive on the website, heritageradionetwork.com, and via podcast on iTunes. Please leave comments and or join our Facebook fan page, Groundworks Inc., We Dig Plants, or visit our website, groundworksgardens.com. See you in the garden.
Happy gardening.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. The following is a message from Jones Family Farms. Jones Family Farms is a 400-acre working farm offering quality agricultural products all year round, from fresh summer berries to Christmas trees in the winter, and an award-winning winery that is open from April to December. The reach of the Jones Family Farms is hard to capture, from their advocacy work through the Working Lands Alliance to ongoing classes in the Harvest Kitchen. Jones Family Farms is as passionate about education as it is about farming. Whether you're picking fresh strawberries or exploring local wines, we hope you're inspired to learn more about Connecticut farming. Visit www.jonesfamilyfarms.com for more information.